Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Good evening and welcome to Encouragementology. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. We are talking about using your past and using your past for the good to propel your future. What do you think of when you review your past? A life full of rich experiences and cherished memories? Better days and bygones? Missed opportunities and regret? Or a time you're trying to forget? What if we could collect the memories from your past, organize their relevance, evaluate their purpose, discover the lesson, and learn from them? What if we could use your past to propel your future? Let's dig a little deeper into that and see what we can come up with. A little of life's fuel, shall we? Well, let me tell you something. No one is perfect, and no one can look back reflecting that everything in their life worked out just like they wanted it to. There are always ups and downs with highs and lows. But how low did it get? And were you able, or are you able, to bounce back? That's the key, right? Keep going. No matter how hard it gets, keep going. Many of us would rather bury the tough times pretending they never happened and vowing to never speak of them again. And others can't seem to let it go and move on, instead staying stuck, reliving the same tragedy or destructive behavior over and over and over. You don't have to be a psychologist to recognize the danger in both of those tactics. Dr. Lisa Firestone from Compassion Matters says, although these approaches to the past may seem entirely contradictory, they actually lead to the same ultimate outcome. If we avoid facing the past, we fail to recognize the many, often limiting ways it's influencing our present. On the other hand, if we over-identify with and ruminate on our childhood experiences, we still find ourselves being ruled by these events. In both cases, we are failing to differentiate and live our lives on our own terms. Attachment research shows that in order to free ourselves from the past, form healthier relationships, and show up today as the people we want to be, we have to make sense and feel the full pain of our story. No matter how hard it is, when we fail to face unresolved pain from our childhood, we have many, often unconscious ways of repeating it. These repetitive patterns are not intentional or thought out. The big and small traumas from our early lives may not consciously feel like they're dictating our actions, but they are. Instead, they come out in ways we don't even realize. For example, in partners we choose, critical attitudes we have toward ourselves, and dynamics we create with our own children. Events from our present day trigger implicit memories that are often painful and cause us to react rather than act on our own best interest. In this sense, we're often reliving rather than living our lives, feeling our past prescriptions rather than forging our own path. Is that what you've been doing? Just reliving your life over and over again, good, bad, and ugly, and not finding a way to propel forward into the future. So what are the ways we relive rather than live our lives? What are those? You probably have your own set of ideas there. But one way is to repeat. This is when we carry our past into the present by repeating behaviors and taking on characteristics of important figures in our early lives. Of course, this can be a good thing when we're adopting ways of being that we value and respect. However, as human beings, we have a tendency to over-identify with the negative traits of our parents, right? Our early caretakers. We actually struggle to surpass or even see ourselves in a different light from the people who originally cared for us. How many times have you said, "I sound just like my mother"? On an unconscious level, we take on our parents' traits in an effort to preserve an idealized image of them. Now, this may seem counterintuitive. It can actually feel painful or threatening to separate ourselves from our parents by seeing them realistically, including all the ways they were limited and all the ways that they hurt us. But instead, we identify with our parents and take on their qualities. For example, if we had an especially elusive or inward parent, we might find ourselves feeling unavailable to our own family, pulling away from relationships that get too close. If we had a parent who worried excessively and even intruded on us, we might find ourselves feeling the same way toward our children and acting in the same evasive and overbearing ways. Another way is by reacting, right? The opposite side of the coin comes when we rebel against our parents' way of being. Once again, it's healthy and wise to identify traits we don't like in our early caretakers and to choose to be different in these ways. However, we sometimes are so determined to be different from our family of origin that we overcompensate or distort our natural way of being. For example, if we hated the way our parents didn't get along, we may grow up writing off relationships of love in general. We may vow to never get too serious with someone or trust anyone too deeply. Or if we felt deprived as kids, we may try to make up for it by overindulging or spoiling our own children. In each of these cases, we're still seeing the present through a filter of our past and failing to separate ourselves from our history. We're not allowing ourselves to fully realize who we really are and what we really want. We can also get stuck by recreating. This is another way we fail to step out from the shadows of our past, recreating events and dynamics that are similar to those we experienced growing up. This pattern can be tricky to identify. However, we may find ourselves somehow dating or marrying people who treat us in ways that are similar to how we were treated as kids. For example, if we grew up with a parent who made us feel small or insignificant, we may find ourselves attracted to those types of partners, the ones that are more dismissive. Or maybe you had a parent that fawned over you, and now you're only attracted to people that build you up or offer you all of their attention. We may even unconsciously provoke people in our lives to react to us in ways that are familiar, even though they were painful. If we were seen as babyish or incompetent as kids, for instance, we may find ourselves acting more helpless or needy with our partner. If we know that's how we get attention, it always worked as a kid, you might find yourself doing the same thing with your own partner. If we had a parent who lost his temper, we may try to provoke that same reaction out of the people we're closest to in our adult lives by insulting them or trying to push their buttons. You can see now why getting over it is ideal, but how hard it may be to get there without doing some significant work. This path to self-discovery is not always one of moving forward, but may actually have a few detours and overnights as we unpack portions of our past. After a short stay and the necessary dissection of lingering issues, it's time to move on. I found some help on this from Melina Fratoli. She gives us 10 creative tips to let go of the past so it won't anchor you down. First, you have to anchor your ship. Allow yourself time to cling to the anchors that bind you. It may seem like a strange piece of advice. This is the first step in the process of moving on, is to anchor. But Perhaps set a half an hour every night to dwell, air quotes, dwell, then challenge yourself not to dwell before or after. If you're used to ruminating and always starting your day with thinking about the past or something challenging that happened that you just can't seem to get over, this can consume a large portion of your day. So in this idea, it's setting aside some time. You know you're going to do it. Why don't you try to harness it and really control it? So if you schedule a time right before lunch, maybe right after work, maybe in the car on the way home, you can sort of set a good, healthy boundary, a perimeter. Number two, think it through. When you begin to dwell in the past more than you feel is healthy, ask yourself a series of open-ended questions. Why does this memory matter to me? Does it serve me to restrict certain opportunities because they remind me of this memory? What's the worst that can happen if I'm faced with a brutal reminder of this memory? What can I do to live with this memory, accept it, and move forward? And of course, eliminate could, should, would from your vocabulary. Coulda, shoulda, woulda. I also like to say, what is your control? If you think about a memory or even something that happened that might be a challenging and you might still be knee-deep in it, what kind of control do you have over the situation currently? And what control do you have over changing the past? If you don't have any control to make any different changes if history, then isn't it time to move on? How about stop rehashing? People love to rehash their problems in hopes of gaining new insight or hearing what they want to hear. Guess what? This does not work. In fact, you may feel even more compelled to dwell in the past. If you stop telling your story, you'll realize more and more each day that you're the one in control. You have the power to unanchor yourself from this past. I always like to remind you to stop the story where the facts end. If you don't know the end of the story and it's just a bunch of what ifs after your small amount of facts, then you're just driving yourself crazy. What ifs are just that. What if this would have happened? You don't know. So sticking with the facts and being able to look at those for what they are is such a healthy perspective. Next time you find yourself spinning out of control and finishing the end of the story, stop yourself and think of that. Stop the story where the facts end. How about toss them in a box? This is a crafty way of letting go of the anchor. Find an old shoebox and stuff it with memories you may have of whatever's holding you down. Shut the box and hide it until you're ready to revisit it again with a different mindset. The key is to not allow yourself to hide it forever, but to get yourself to a place where you can achieve and accept. Isn't that what it comes down to? Acceptance. Really, the last step in grieving and any challenge and past struggle, there is a grieving process. So evaluate those steps. Find out where you are on that scale. You're trying to get to acceptance. That doesn't mean you fixed it. It doesn't mean you were able to right the wrong. You've just come to a place of acceptance so that you can move on. How about putting it into words? You don't have to be an eloquent writer to get your feelings out in a letter. Take a pen and jot, or even doodle, down everything you've ever wanted to say to your anchor person or anchor thing. If it's a situation, personify the memory. Paper is tougher than you think, so don't hold anything back. Now comes the hardest part. Dispose of your letter. Bury it, shred it, even burn it. Just getting those thoughts out, it's so much different than talking. Don't you always think that? Like you confront a person and you think, oh man, if I would have written all that down, I could have done it. You know, you're not standing there staring at me and emotions aren't pouring out of me where I can't think of my next statement. But being able to write it out and then read it through. You know, sometimes the memories that we have in our head, if we just keep them swirling around, we end up building on them and they become more exaggerated and more weighted than they would if we were to repeat them. Maybe you're not ready to repeat them to another person, but you could repeat them in a letter that you're going to destroy. Maybe you put it in that box, right? Realize who matters. Take Dr. Seuss' words to heart. Those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind. Take this as an opportunity to discover who is really touching your life now. Who's truly there for you? How can you enjoy your shared connection with a person that's in your life right now? Try your hardest to forget about who once was there. We can get so stuck living our past that we forget to live our present. We think about, even in a negative way, those that once touched our lives and forget about the people that are currently touching our lives. This is a great time to find gratitude. When you find yourself spinning out of control and ruminating over your past, stop yourself and write down all the ways you should be grateful for today. It really reminds you of what's going on. It also transports you back to the present, which is where you should be spending your time. Reciprocate the efforts. Be there for those who are there for you. This is a great step in building new and meaningful relationships to help focus on the present. Perhaps they're anchored down too. You don't even know that. You can help each other. We're all on a journey, and your journey might be a little bit further along. This is why reciprocated relationships are the only ones that truly work. Reaching out and worrying about someone else will really shift the focus from your own problems to someone else. It truly works. That's why I'm such an advocate for groups. Anytime you can get together, talk it out with other people is such a healthy experience. When you are in a negative mood and you're really stuck in your own problems, listening to someone else and caring about someone else, really showing empathy for someone else, can bring you up out of the dark despair that you're in and help you and refocus you in a positive way. Plus, it's super helpful for the person that you're offering encouragement to. Find your thing. Your anchor does not own you. It can't dictate your actions, make you feel inferior, or restrict you from living your life, the life that you want, without your consent. You are your own person. Every anatomical and emotional part of you, find something unique, make it your own, and rise up. Don't let someone hold you down. You have so many gifts, so much to give. And finding out what that is and what the passion and the purpose is half the fun. So let go of what you can't control. Pick up the controls of your own life and start moving forward. Disconnect or reconnect. You can use these terms interchangeably. By disconnecting from an anchor, you're reconnecting with yourself. Open up that anchor box you've been hiding. Look at its contents with an accepting, not pessimistic or self-defeating attitude. Walk the streets you once walked, and maybe you'll notice a newly painted house or get the chance to pet a puppy along the way. The idea here is time does heal. And when you're consumed with these negative thoughts, it's hard to see the world around you. It's hard to appreciate the gifts that you've been given. But once you start letting these go and realizing and accepting that nothing can be done to change it, all you can do is change your future by taking charge and moving forward. Then you look around and it's like you have a whole new world, whole new thing to look at. When you start focusing that energy in a positive way on yourself and your growth, you will propel into the future. How about make new memories? Keep yourself busy with physical activity. Join a club. Meet like-minded people. Meet someone who has no clue what you do for a living and why you do it, and just live as much as you can. Every day, you have the opportunity to make new memories happen. This is a gift we often take for granted. Remember, anchors don't have to hold you down. If you choose to let go, they can become slight road bends in the endless highway of life. I'm good at letting things go and moving on. The primary reason is I don't like to be sad or in a bad mood. I hate conflict and would much rather sweep it under the rug in lieu of harmony, but I know that can only be temporary. Those feelings and those scars are still there, just below the surface, and it's shallow, so it doesn't take much to reach them. I could run across a trigger that would take me right back there, or even more disturbing, a painful memory with no warning for no reason. I kept thinking I had the power to make it go away by pushing it down deeper, but the more I pushed, the more it weighed me down. Because of this, I decided to face the past. I went back and I looked at events in my life with both eyes open so that I could honestly claim my role and look for the lesson. It wasn't quick, and it took a commitment. It doesn't make it go away either. There is still regret there, but it does help me walk away from those feelings with a positive impact and direction versus staying stuck. As you start your journey back in time to understand how your past can uncover the key ingredients for a successful future, it's important to consider a few things. Be kind. Remember, you are always learning. Painful or regretful memories might be linked to vulnerable and naive periods of your life. You made choices with the information you had available at that time. So be kind. Claim your role. Taking responsibility is an empowering step to forgiveness. Only when you claim your role in your past can you uncover the lesson. If you spend precious time blaming everyone else, the lesson will get buried with your responsibility. So claim it, own it, and then let it go. Forgive yourself. As much as you would like a do-over, you're stuck with the past being just that, past tense and unchangeable. In order to find the lesson, you gotta forgive yourself. Too much time is spent ruminating over choices that can't be undone. So channel that energy instead into understanding the lesson that is pointing you in a brighter future. Move on. Once you've done a deep dive, it's important to get what you need and move on. We've said it all night, but replaying and rehashing those painful times is not going to make it any clearer or any easier. Shine a light in the dark corners of your memories and with an objective lens, glean what you need to uncover, the lesson that you need to learn, and then move on to a healthier place, your future where possibilities are endless. Do you have enough fuel to propel you into the future? Obviously, that doesn't happen in a span of a show, but I'm hoping you have enough inspiration to go back and do the work. You owe it to yourself to free yourself from whatever it is that's keeping you stuck in the past or even in the present. Visualizing what you want your future to look like is not only a super fun thing to do, but it's incredibly important. Every year, Matt and I make a list of our goals for the next year. But first, we make a list of everything we've accomplished in the current calendar year. What a rush it is. If you feel like your year passed you by without even taking notice, then look at what all you did. And I bet you'll be surprised. Next, think about the year to come. What do you want to do? Where do you want to go? What do you want to accomplish? Sky's the limit, but if this is all new to you, take it slow. Create some goals that you need to stretch to reach, but that are realistically obtainable in a calendar year. No reason to set yourself up for failure out of the gate. We keep our lists in a journal-style book so we can easily revisit it when you need a shot in the arm or something to celebrate. Now, go beyond. Go beyond next year and really visualize what you want your life to look like. Who are you? What are you doing? How does it make you feel? What is important to you? Here are four ways that I found from Matt Mayberry. He's a performance strategist, and it's going to help visualization work for you. So, picture yourself victorious. If you can't see it, then it's not going to happen. In order to achieve your biggest goals and dreams, you have to picture yourself victorious. You have to look beyond your current circumstances and past failures. Visualize as many details as you can. If you're on the beach, feel the warm sun on your body, the wind in your hair, the salty ocean waves spraying you in the face. Imagine the environment, the people around you. What are you wearing? What are you hearing? Recreate any feelings that are in alignment with your dreams. Matt says, I visualize myself playing college football. I smelled the locker room and the cut grass in the football field, and I heard the crowds in the bleachers as they shouted for Matt Mayberry. If you make this part of your daily routine, you will be amazed at the improvement in your life and astounded when your dream is realized. Number two, utilize the power of a trigger card. Matt says, when I was 16 years old and after a teenage drug addiction easily could have killed me, my biggest goal and dream at that time was to get a Division I college scholarship for football. I put this incredibly huge goal at the time on a note card, which served as my trigger card. From my 3x5 index card, I read daily, I will receive a Division I college scholarship for football by next year. I could feel how awesome that moment was, and I felt happy and alive. Get in the habit of doing this every day like I did. Each morning and each night, read those index cards, close your eyes, and imagine yourself accomplishing and following through on that major goal of yours. Create a vision board. A vision board worked wonders in my life when I believed there was no bigger future in store for me. It gave me the chance to actually see my goals. This vision board can be a poster board, a piece of paper, the back of a cardboard box, or anything you have. You could even have a vision book. On the vision boards and inside the books, put pictures that illustrate what you desire in your life. For me, says Matt, it was photos of college football players who played their optimal best. I wanted to be one of the best too. On my vision boards, I also posted quotes that embodied what I wanted, and I read them every single day. For me, I used Pinterest to really put in different quotes, different things that picked me up. I have a board that's for something that just needs to pick me up and make me feel better. And I have a board of sayings that will really help me reach that extra mile. You know, so some are more soothing and some are more get up and go type. Feed your mind with happy, loving memories. It's important to consistently feed your mind with happy, loving memories. He says, I'm not referring to reliving the past, but to recreating those moments that once made you smile. Recall times of happiness in your home, such as birthday parties or a get-together with friends, a special holiday, or something encouraging a loved one expressed. Do whatever you have to do to keep the naysayers and negative people out of your life as much as possible. You need all the happiness and love you can surround yourself with if you want to consistently focus and work towards your dreams. Maybe instead of looking at your past with regret, you're consumed with the glory days when everything was simple, your health was better, your worries were minimal, and life just seemed to be better. Instead of ruminating, you're stuck reliving. Remember, everything is about a healthy balance. And while it's great to walk through your past remembering happy moments, it's not healthy to stay there believing you've already lived your best days. Do you do that? Do you think, oh, I just love how I was growing up and in my college days and before I got married and when the kids were young? And it's always like the best days are behind us. Well, Amanda Barner and Celia Harris remind us why we remember our youth as one big party. Memory is selective. Don't forget that. Events that are encoded or stored in your long-term memory. But not everything we do, say, feel every day is encoded and stored in your memory. We're more likely to encode events that stand out, that are highly emotional, mark first-time experiences, or represent something big, big changes in our lives. Your first ever music festival or a party that got wonderfully out of control. Recalling or retrieving events from our long-term memory also is motivated. By motivated, we mean that remembering some events but not others serves a psychological purpose. Former party animals thinking about their past selectively remember party animal memories. Each time they think of these memories, instead of memories inconsistent with this picture, they reinforce a particular view of themselves and their hedonistic past. Memory researchers call this retrieval-induced forgetting. By repeatedly rehearsing or practicing some memories, that time I partied all night, we forget about other related memories, the time I studied all night, shaping and reshaping our sense of the past. The second is a phenomenon called the reminiscent bump. When we look back over the past, we don't remember an equal number of events across our lives. Instead, we remember more from our teenage and early adult years. Memories in this reminiscent bump overwhelmingly are positive, not negative experiences. Remember, this is before all the craziness happened. Researchers have long speculated why, but one explanation is these are the years when we form a stable lifelong identity. Because the events that happen to us in this bump are formative and central to how we view ourselves, we tend to remember them well. And because, for most of us, we selectively remember the past to form a positive, optimistic identity, we encode and store positive rather than negative memories. So the identity we form in our early childhood, the wild child, shapes our recollections and helps shape the rest of our lives, the former wild child settling down. Memory can be social glue. The third reason is that memory is inherently social. We use memory to build our individual identity, but just as importantly, we use memory to build social bonds, entertain others, and teach the next generation. Do what I say, not what I did. In fact, researchers have shown that adolescents who can retell their parents' teenage memories and connect them to their own developing sense of identity report higher levels of psychological well-being. Events become exaggerated, parties become wilder, and the bands, well, they're way more amazing as we retell these stories over and over to different audiences and for different purposes, from nostalgic reminiscing at our high school reunion to introducing our children to Pink Floyd or starting those tricky parenting conversations about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Remembering them also helps us to see ourselves then and now in desirable ways. And sharing these memories binds us together in important ways. But were we ever as wild as we remember? Perhaps, or perhaps not. But our memories of more carefree times serve us well. I hope that you have been able to pick up a few ideas to help propel you forward. Maybe you're stuck. Maybe you're not so stuck in the past, but maybe you're stuck from moving forward. How can you get unhinged so that you can realize some great things that this future has ahead of you? Well, we talked about really one way to do that is to find out what's keeping you trapped. Really unpack that. Don't just stock it up to, well, you know, it is what it is. This is the cards. These are the cards I've been dealt. This is the life I have to live. This is what I'm shackled with. You know, things happen, life deals me these rotten hands. No, there are certain things you're in charge of. Maybe you can't control everything in life, but what you can control is your outlook. And if you have an outlook like that, you are going to stay stuck. There is no fuel. There's no rocket fuel in that kind of thinking. And in order to get past that, you have to believe that there is more out there for you, right around the corner, just beyond your reach. And then figure out how to stretch to get it. One way we talked about is to look at your current situation, find out where you are, and start going back to see where you might have got off course. What are you still wrestling with? What are you pulling with you? And we talked about an anchor. Dragging that anchor through the sea. Like, what is still holding you down? And we talked about coming to terms with your control over that situation. Claiming it, owning it, claiming your responsibility is different than having control over the situation. Know your part, understand your role, but then do you have the power to change that? And if the answer is no, which if it's in the past, you certainly don't, but you do have the power to learn from that, modify your approach in the future, and strike out in a different direction. That you do own, and that you really should capture, because that's going to make all the difference in the world. We talked about reliving our lives versus living our lives, stuck on that hamster wheel of repeat, react, recreate. You know, we also talked about 10 creative tips to let it go. And one of those tips was, hey, sit with it for a minute. If you can't go cold turkey in your worrying and ruminating, then schedule some actual time. I think that's a brilliant tip. You know, start weaning yourself off. If you actually set an alarm, wouldn't that be crazy down the road if you set an alarm and you're in such a great place and then your alarm goes off? Oh, well, it's time that I need to start reliving the past and start being upset. One of these days, you're going to be in such a great place, you're going to look down at that alarm and say, heck no, nobody's got time for that. Then we talked about thinking it through and really finding out what is important. Why are you holding on to it? Why does it mean so much to you? How about put it in a box, label it, stick it in the corner? Don't look through it every single day. Disconnect from these feelings. Start making new memories. So, so important to really be kind to yourself. Forgive yourself. There's no way to move on unless you forgive yourself. But remember, I say it all the time, you are still growing. There is so much more growth in your future. And every day you are learning and every day you're moving in some direction. Let's hope it's forward. We talked about visualizing. I love that. Absolutely love it. Think about creating a list of what you did this year and what you want to do next year. Now, I have mine in a book, but tear those pages out or make a copy of them and stick them in front of you. It's important to see those. Matt Mayberry talked about putting it on an index card. That's also an awesome idea. Put it on an index card, carry it in your purse, carry it in your wallet. Pull it out, be able to look at it, rehearse that over and over and over again. Jack Canfield, who wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul, actually took a bestseller list and altered it. He printed it, altered it, and put Chicken Soup for the Soul at number one. And he posted it all over the office. And that was their mantra. They were going to hit number one. And guess what? They did on every one of their books. So think about that. Visualize, rehearse. That could be your future. So I challenge you, be willing to examine the rough spots of your past to smooth out the future. Every day we're growing and learning from other people and from our own experiences. Use those experiences, positive and negative, to uncover keys to propel your future. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. I stumbled through until the path was clear.